Greetings and thanks for tuning in to the Hooks Baseball Podcast. I am Michael Coffin. We have a great show for you this week. Hooks GM Wes Weigel will join us. Also, the principal at King High School here in Corpus Christi, Elizabeth Perez. And Wyatt Matheson, a Cal Allen High School product who has gone on to have a tremendous professional career, most recently with the Reno Aces in the Arizona Diamondbacks system. So we'll be chatting with Wyatt here shortly. But now let's bring in Hooks staffer J.D. Davis. J.D., the Hooks have partnered with Minor League Baseball and their Community First initiative. Can you kind of give us a backstory on the campaign and how folks can get involved?
Yeah, absolutely. So this is one of the great things about being a part of Minor League Baseball is that we're able to have a national impact that benefits our local community here and just be a part of something that's this big minor league wide initiative, but then also be in helping our neighbors right here in the Coastal Bend. And so the way to get involved with this is to visit MILB.com/community first. And it's a program that Minor League Baseball's partnered with Feeding America. And for those that don't know, Feeding America is a nationwide organization of different food banks and organizations that go to help feed the hungry in the United States. And Feeding America is actually locally partnered with the Coastal Bend Food Bank. And so what you're able to do is go to the website, donate some money, select the Corpus Christi Hooks as your hometown team, and then that donation will go directly to the Coastal Bend Food Bank and help feed those here in the Coastal Bend. And then on top of that, for every $10 that's donated that's attached to the Corpus Christi Hooks here through this program is going to go towards a ticket for a frontline worker here in the Coastal Bend. So whenever Hooks Baseball opens back up, we have some games at Whataburger Field, we're going to donate tickets to frontline workers that include our healthcare staff, our first responders, and even our grocery line workers, those that are pulling in the long days and long nights, making sure to take care of us here in the Coastal Bend. So it's really, really an exciting program, something that's fun to be a part of, in a way we can raise a little money, help those that need it here locally, and also give back to those that are going above and beyond in their everyday jobs right now.
Yeah, one thing that really jumps out to me about this the COVID-19 crisis is you get a new appreciation for frontline workers and how that really has been expanded, because it's not only, you know, the firefighters and the police officers and the nurses and doctors; those guys are doing an amazing job as well. But it's, you know, the people at HEB, the people working at gas stations that don't have that choice of staying at home. They have to go out and keep this place running so we can enjoy the things that keep us going.
Absolutely. You know, that's what's great about the Coastal Bend, I think, is that the way that we've been able to rally around as a community, we've been able to come together. But you really do see, you know, we've heard the phrase like essential workers a lot and what that means. But you really see what's essential in our society and what, you know, what are the things that we require to just operate kind of at a base normal level. And so we want to do our part and give those folks a break whenever we get to that stage, whenever the season's reopening, give them an opportunity to come out and enjoy a game at the ballpark and have some fun and raise some funds for Feeding America and for the Coastal Bend Food Bank while we're at it.
Once again, the website MILB.com/community first. If you want, just go to the Hooks website, cchooks.com. There's a link there at the top of the webpage for that. All right, JD, let's get this show on the road. Our first guest this week is the general manager of the Corpus Christi Hooks, Mr. Wes Weigel. Wes joined the ball club in December of 2017, so this is his third campaign here with the Corpus Christi Hooks. Part of this assignment, he was an associate with the Astros, helping out the Astros run their business ops for the club's minor league properties. Wes, thanks for taking the time.
Yeah, thanks for having me, Mike and JD. I'm excited to be on the podcast.
So, Wes, obviously this is a difficult time for everybody. We're all kind of figuring out how to get through the day. What's been your typical day working from home and doing the social distancing and isolating away from folks? What's it look like at the Weigel household right now?
Well, it's progressed along the way. It started out, you know, a bit disorganized, I'd say, just because I think we're all trying to figure out exactly if you don't work from home every day of the week, how do you do that? Especially when you're an operator, you're used to being hands-on and being able to have those face-to-face conversations. So you know, combine that with three little guys running around, and you've got something to figure out. So, staying organized is the best way that I've moved forward. Whether that's with my kids' schoolwork, combined with setting the agenda for the day with the staff, and putting a game plan together early. That's super helpful. And key thing that we've done great as an organization is communicate and over communicate at times. It's good to have everybody on the same page, and keeping organized and communicating is the key to getting through this, at least for me personally.
Wes, your family was featured on the latest installment of the Hook's Backyard Bash. Your wife Jamie, your sons Brooks, Ethan, and Harvey. During this time of quarantining, have you learned something new about your family that you didn't necessarily know, let's say, in early March?
I've gotten to spend a lot of time with both Brooks and Ethan, and as life progresses, and they're both 6 and 4 now, life progresses, and you don't have time to slow down. It's go, go, go. It's, you value the moments that you can spend time with family, but you don't get a whole lot of them. So I've really enjoyed the time sitting down with both Brooks and Ethan and talking through a book or going out and playing baseball and working on, key skills that, I haven't had the time to do previously. I think I've, seen unique character traits and more of their personalities come out. And I think that's probably, it's great in a lot of ways. And it's been a good thing for me as a parent and them as, kids that are hitting that elementary school stage. So,
Wes, I kind of want to jump in before we look to the future. I want to jump in and look at your history and kind of what led you to the Hooks. Can you kind of give us the brief, how did you end up in baseball? And did you think that you would be here, coming out of college and when you were growing up? Is this something that you saw in your future?
Well, I've always been a sports nut. Grew up playing sports. It was part of what I did in college. I went to West Point, the military academy, and part of leadership there, how they teach it, there's the athletic piece of leadership, and you're always with your troops downrange doing different physical activities, and they really pound that into you at West Point on the fields of friendly strife, as we would call it. So I've always had a love for sports and appreciation of what it does to help build teams, to teach you, key components of life, camaraderie, a teamwork. You learn a lot about yourself, playing sports. So I've always loved leading teams. I've always loved being a part of teams, and that baseball provides that unique opportunity. I can't say that I was planning on being in professional baseball 10 years ago, coming out of flight school and flying Apache helicopters. It was quite the pivot, but it made sense. This organization, the Astros, working for the Astros and now the Hooks, guiding the way forward for our organizations, has been fun and enlightening, and it corresponds to who I am and what I value.
Chatting with Hooks GM Wes Weigel, you mentioned your tenure as an Apache helicopter pilot, also a battalion commander flying combat missions in Afghanistan and Europe. Can you give us an overview of some of the places that you've been while serving our country, maybe some of the experiences that you've had that have informed your outlook on things and your appreciation for this country and the folks that make it such a special place?
I've been fortunate to see a number of areas in the world, different parts of the United States, the Middle East, Europe. I had the opportunity in my last duty station with my family was in Germany. So you get to see a lot of different cultures. You get to learn about people and, in different parts of the world, which is, truly enlightening. Being in the military, you learn about sacrifice, and you see it all around you. And you don't so much think about it from your own perspective necessarily, but you see the sacrifice that your troops are making. You see the sacrifices that, military members are making, their families are making. And it's all for the red, white, and blue, ultimately. There's a long list of things I learned and took away from the military, but the sacrifice that our military members make to serve is extraordinary, and I'm proud to have been a part of that all the way, you know, up to my most recent time in the military. I was a company commander in Europe. It's been an honor to serve and lead alongside of great Americans.
Wes, just to follow up, what made you, growing up in Aiken, South Carolina, what made you want to join the Army and go to West Point? Can you take us through that a little bit?
Yeah, it's a unique story how I came to think about going to West Point and the military academy. I originally was looking at the Citadel because it's a South Carolina school in Charleston, and you know, heavy military presence from the graduates of the Citadel. I toured the school, and you know, I thought that it was the structure and the discipline that would serve me well. And September 11th kind of hit home for me. I remember, you know, where I was the impact that it had on me. And I think that was what really resonated with me to want to serve. Why I went to West Point, that's a different story. I was leaving high school last period early. We had a football game that night. I was on the football team, team captain that year, of course. And I had an open period at the end of the day. Pulling out of the parking lot, I wasn't paying attention. I had football in the mind, and I got T-boned right in the side of my vehicle. And I had to go to the hospital. I was okay. I had a mild concussion, and just to get checked out, went to the hospital. And I'm sitting in the ER, and across from me was an old timer and his wife, and they're holding hands, and just, you know, cute couple that I ended up, you know, sparking a conversation with. They were curious about why I'm wearing my football jersey and who I was. And I got to talking with the old man, and he was a class of 1958 West Point retired colonel. And you know, just some of the stories that he had and some of the things that he told me really inspired me. And from that point on, I was focused in on, you know, hitting the requirements to get into West Point. So a unique story, not the typical path to get in a car wreck and have that moment where you think you need to go to the military academy, but that was it.
You know, kind of a wrong place, but being at the right place at the right time, really.
That's right. That's right. It showed me that, you know, we all have a plan, and you know, there's things in life that just are presented in front of you, and there's reason to everything.
I want to jump forward now. You know, your background going to Rice University for your MBA and working with the Astros. When I set out to do the MBA and had the opportunity with the Astros, was that kind of the plan all along? Was that again kind of being in the right place at the right time? How did all of your relationship with baseball begin on the professional side?
So coming out of the military, it's a difficult thing for, you know, military veterans to come out and you know, what's next? What do I want to do in the civilian world? And, you know, for me, I wanted to have a more stable life for my family. You know, we traveled all over the place and it was great, but Brooks and Ethan were both 4 and 2. And, you know, I didn't want to be away from them anymore. So that was a big part of why I was getting out of the military. But what do you do? What inspires you? What makes you tick? That's the question. And it's a hard one to answer, but I wanted to get into business. I always wanted to own or operate my own business. And, you know, that's what inspired me. So what I had was leadership management experience, you know, led troops in combat, had, you know, difficult missions that accomplished, you know, throughout my time. But I really needed the business acumen to have balance and be able to catch up with my peers. So I decided to go to get my MBA, and that's kind of what led me to Rice. Rice had a great military scholars program. You know, their support for the military is extraordinary, and the veterans that come out of it. And, you know, I'd spent a lot of time in Texas. I was at Fort Hood and at Fort Bliss for multiple years with the family. And we love Texas. We love the people. We love the climate, especially coming out of Germany. It's a little bit warmer and more my style, you know, being born and raised from South Carolina. But, you know, we wanted to come back to Texas, and you know, Rice was the right choice for us. It was the right choice for me academically and as an institution as a whole. So that's kind of what brought us back to Rice and Texas. So from there, you know, I explored a number of opportunities, and I had the opportunity to work with the Astros on building a business plan for Fayetteville, North Carolina, our new team there, our single-A advanced team. And that's what brought me into the Astros organization. Fayetteville, North Carolina is the home of Fort Bragg, largest military installation in the world. And there's a lot of unique warfighters that work and train out of that area. And it's one of the largest veteran populations, you know, in the country. So I was the right guy to help guide that ship and help, you know, senior leaders in the Astros build that plan and execute it.
Chatting with Hook's GM Wes Weigel, recipient of the Bronze Star Medal awarded to members of the Armed Forces for meritorious service in a combat zone. Wes, we get together as a team, and our directors get together virtually, you know, about three times a week. And at the top of each one of these calls, you kind of give a breakdown on the coronavirus, not only nationally, globally, but also in Texas and in Nueces County. And it's nice for me because I know you've seen some really scary situations up close and personal, you know, that you're kind of steering the ship during this time. And I wonder, how often do you draw upon your combat experiences and apply them to your business dealings normally, but also, you know, in this time of crisis?
There's definitely correlations with combat and what we're dealing with now. Granted, there's a number of unknowns that we still haven't figured out. But ultimately, you know, relying on our health officials to put a game plan together is important to combat those unknowns. There's definitely a large correlation there. Ultimately, for us as the Hooks organization, it's about having a game plan, executing the game plan, and relying heavily on our leaders within the organization. Ultimately, we all can't get through this pandemic without each other. And, you know, communication is key. It's key in combat. It's key when you're dealing with any kind of crisis. You've got smart folks on the ground, and when you're doing combat missions, smart folks in the air flying beside you. You've got to leverage those personalities, those unique, skilled leaders, and you got to execute a game plan. So, really, it's an evolving game plan that we all have to combat at this point. And, you know, our health officials, our law enforcement, the healthcare workers, those are the key individuals that we need to support to continue to evolve that game plan and, you know, come up with ways to prevent, you know, the further spread of the coronavirus and get back to normalcy. We've got a great nation that prides itself in always winning. So I have no doubt that we will win in this fight.
I've got a kind of a tricky question. I'm trying to figure out how to ask.
Oh,
this,
Lord.
But yeah. So Coffin will clean all this up in the post edit. But, you know, I think Mike, it comes to baseball, you know, he's been broadcasting games since his high school days. And I think if you said, Mike, what were you, you know, what would you do if you didn't have baseball? Like there's kind of this defining moment probably where he could point to it. So like, oh yeah, this is when I knew. And I think about my time, starting in minor league baseball and thinking like, oh yeah, this is the place for me. And I kind of like, I remember like a specific, you know, there's like two memories I have in Quad Cities, like a tarp pool and getting up super early and rolling hot dogs for $1 hot dog kids day type thing. Do you remember a moment where you felt like you had become a true baseball lifer? Like, is there a moment that you remember with the Hooks or with the Astros that just kind of sealed it for you, that said, I'm in the right place and this is where I want to be?
You know, there's a number of things that jump in my head, and it comes back to, you know, providing a phenomenal experience, heavily focused on the customer. Every day, when you're in baseball, you get to see the future. You get to see young kids come out to the ballpark. They're inspired by what they see on the field. They're inspired by those athletes that strive for perfection. They're there for fun. It's an important part of our younger generation's development is to be involved with sports. And every 70 of all of our 70 games throughout the season, we get to see that in action, whether it's, you know, a young kid that's excited to get George Springer bobblehead when they walk in the door, or they get to potentially get an autograph ball, putting themselves right down by the fence. I think those moments kind of are what being in minor league baseball is all about, that fan interaction, inspiring the next generation. One incident that stands out in my mind is there was he must have been 6 or 7 year old kid with Down syndrome. He was in the tunnel area trying to get a signed ball. One of the players was his idol. So I had the opportunity to, you know, take that ball from him and go find the player in the locker room and get it to him. And it brought the kid and his parents to tears. And we have so many unique experiences in baseball where we're inspiring fans, future generations with unique, memorable experiences. And you get to be creative every single day while doing it. So there's no corresponding industry like it. And I'm inspired to be a part of it. And I hope we can get back to baseball here pretty soon.
I know we're all champing at the bit to make that happen and get back to the ballpark. Wes, what's the communication right now with season members and partners and single game buyers? What are the hooks telling all those folks?
You know, we've got some great partners and great members. They are the most devoted fan base that you'll see. And we've asked them to be patient with us. Unfortunately, we don't know what the future holds, and every day is an evolving day. We're learning more about what the future holds for our nation, our economy, our leaders, our city leaders, our state and federal leaders are all trying to make the best decisions to move us forward. And I think Major League Baseball as a whole is trying to, you know, come up with a good game plan. Our message is stay patient with us. You know, we're committed to making sure that our fans are safe, and when the time comes, we'll get them in the ballpark and continue to provide that unique and memorable experience that, you know, you can't get anywhere else except for Waterbury or Field. So hopefully soon we'll have a game plan moving forward for the season and get everybody back to what we love doing in Corpus Christi.
Wes, speaking of this season, can you talk a little bit about maybe what's your favorite improvement that's coming to the ballpark, or something that you're really excited, you know, for the fans to experience when they come out to Whataburger Field this year?
Well, we've got some really neat improvements, and thanks to the City of Corpus Christi, specifically City Manager, Type A Board, and the City Council for working with us to improve our ballpark. Our ballpark's coming up on our 16th season. We needed some improvements. We've been investing over the last 15 years into the stadium, but we needed some structural improvements. The salt air from Corpus Christi is harsh, as we all know it, on the every piece of equipment, on, you know, the structures around the city. We were fortunate enough to partner with the city to put $3 million into the ballpark this season. My pick, I guess, for top improvements, definitely going to be the video boards in the outfield to replace the tri-visions that are currently in the outfield walls, both on the right field side and the left field side. We're going to put over 160 feet of digital board, about 6 feet high, into those walls. And it's really going to transform the experience. And JD, I know you're excited. You know, we get to you know, do all kinds of neat interactive experiences with our fans, whether that's you know, doing races alongside the digital board, or you know, other things that really allow us to take over the ballpark in conjunction with our large video board to make the fan experience that much better.
beyond baseball, what do you see the role of the Hooks and Whataburger Field to be in terms of this community and helping to rebuild and to rebound in the wake of COVID-19?
We've got to be at the tip of the spear. We've got to lead the community through this. And we our staff, our organization takes that upon our shoulders. I mean, we can't do it alone. We've got to do it in conjunction with our city leaders, our organizations that do so much for our community. That's how we're going to get through COVID, whether it's feeding the homeless or other nonprofit organizations throughout the community. We've got to come together to do what we can. And that's something the Hooks have always done. We've always led from the front. We've promoted change when necessary, and we've helped do so much for different community organizations and people throughout the city. So that's what we'll continue to do, and ultimately we'll get through it. We just have to be a proponent for the future.
You've adapted to the baseball life and you know, jumped in head first, but I think on top of that, you've adapted to Corpus Christi and really, you know, from our conversations, feel like you fell in love with the city and the area. Is there anything that you know, what stands out, I guess, to you that makes Corpus Christi special? What do you enjoy about living here in the Coastal Bend?
Well, there's so many things. Well, first off, the fact that you can walk outside when it's 85 degrees and still, you know, not break a sweat because the wind is constant. You're constantly in that tropical environment. You know, coming from Houston, you walk outside and, you know, you immediately start to sweat. The climate, the culture, the people, it's such a friendly community. You've got that Southern feel where people are very welcoming. They want to help you. They want to support you. They want you to succeed. And there's a proud culture in Corpus Christi. Folks are proud to be a part of the city and proud to continue to grow our economy, to grow our presence both in the state and nationally. So I've just enjoyed the people. I've enjoyed, I enjoy fishing. That's always a nice break from the monotony of life is going out there and being able to, you know, cast a spinnerbait or whatnot. So the people, the culture and the climate are all winners for me.
Wes, one final question, bud. I don't know if it's an indication on my personality, but I often have a dream that I'm falling. Do you dream sometimes that you're flying? How often do you have that itch to fly every day? I mean, could you hop in an Apache helicopter right now and go?
Absolutely. I've still got a key. No, I do get those twitches occasionally where I, you know, want to be in the air. It's something that'll always be a part of me. Something that I'm proud that I did. And you learn so much about yourself flying in tense situations. I always tell people helicopters aren't meant to fly. It's like a upside down lawnmower. So, you know, it's there are days when I miss it. And then, you know, days like today when it's blowing 30 knots, and I don't miss it so much. So if you have any links to Apaches, I'll be certain take you up. Yeah, I'll give you a ride anytime, MC.
Well, heck, they disassemble them in your parking lot half the time anyway, so you have somewhat access there.
Yeah, I didn't tell you guys, but I may or may not have been in one of those Apaches a few weeks back.
No comment. Well, Wes, we don't tell you enough, but thank you very much for your service, and thanks for being here today and for doing this. We really appreciate it.
No, it's my pleasure. Thanks for having me, and go Hooks.
Hi, y'all. It's Amy Johnson here. Today, I'm joined by Elizabeth Perez. She's the principal of King High School here in Corpus Christi. Elizabeth, thanks for joining us today. How are you?
I'm well. Thanks for having me, Amy.
Yeah, definitely. So we just wanted to ask you a little bit about how things are going with King High School and the word on the streets there. I know, obviously, everyone's schooling from home. So how's that going for y'all?
It was an adjustment. You know, we're into our second 6 weeks with this distant learning, and we've gotten better at it. We didn't anticipate having to do this. We had a week off after spring break. We thought it would just be a week, and then it ended up, you know, the remainder of the school year. So we have actually done a better job this 6 weeks of being prepared, getting information out to parents and getting the distance learning more streamlined, I would say, than we were rushing for it the last 6 weeks. And of course, we have those students who unfortunately don't have access to computers or internet or what have you, but we've done a great job of providing offline instruction as well, picking up packets, delivering packets, anything that we had to do to continue the learning. So it's actually going really well right now.
That's great. I was curious how that would work for, you know, the families that didn't have access to computers. So that the workaround for that, bringing them the packets, that's awesome. You said you're starting your second 6 weeks already. And, you know, the challenge at first is probably like, okay, the kids, you know, how do we keep them encouraged and things like that? But, you know, I've seen a lot of parents on Facebook and things, you know, posting jokes about it, you know, that it's like tough for them because they're not normally teachers. So along with the kids, what are y'all doing to help the parents stay engaged too with the children?
You know, it's just about communication. And of course, we have that great online program, Canvas, that allows us to communicate with parents constantly and they can view what it is we're doing. But really, it's been communication, just utilizing all my staff members and communicating with parents, communicating with students if they're having issues, like I said, with the online program, or if they're having issues with packets. You know, we reach out to them constantly. We're utilizing our support staff to, if anything, I think I have some parents complain that we call a little too much, but we just want to make sure that if there's any assistance that they need or training that they need, that we are supporting them in that process. And they've done a great job of communicating with us as well. And we're using so many different avenues to continue that communication, whether that's Twitter, our Facebook, our webpage. We have a messenger. I try to reach out to parents at least once a week just to touch base with them on anything that is changing or things that are coming up due. But I'll have to say our staff, you know, they've been troopers and they've really stepped in to help them because, like you say, a lot of these parents, unfortunately, they're working parents as well. And some of them still have to work and unfortunately have taken on the role of having to educate them as well. And they get some stumbled just as well. So we have to continue that communication so we can support them in the process.
Yeah, that's great. Y'all have a lot of outlets too, like you mentioned, Twitter and all the social media. So how are you staying connected with students through social media? I know, you know, you're active on Twitter and other things like that. What sort of things are you doing there to connect with the groups and teams?
Yes, you know, we definitely post information that they need to know, but we're also, I try my best to just send shout outs to them and just let them know that we're thinking of them. You know, our seniors are going through a tough time right now and missing out on some great celebrations, and it's disheartening. So we just try to continue to lift their spirits. But most of our communication, like I said, is not only to support them academically, but to support all our students socially. If we do anything, what we do most of as well is just check in with kids and tell them that we miss them. How are they doing? You know, do they need anything? And if we have some that we feel aren't feeling the best right now, then we have our counselors that also we encourage them to reach out to those students to still provide counseling, you know, to meet their needs. But again, it's just I continue to just want to communicate with them. And I put some highlights on Twitter. We just recently went and delivered yard signs to all our seniors. Like I said, because they're the ones that are feeling it the most, and they're the ones that we're so disheartened that they won't be able to celebrate all the great things like prom and senior farewell and, you know, going back to their elementaries and walking those halls to encourage those elementary students. So really just, again, using all avenues to communicate with them. And like I said, not only supporting them academically, but letting them know that we love them, we miss them, and we're here.
That's really cool with the seniors too. I know that's can't be an easy time for them. And I'm sure they really appreciated y'all coming out and delivering those signs for them. Speaking with Elizabeth Perez, the principal of King High School, another unique situation on top of all of this that y'all been put into is hiring Doug Foster, new head football coach and athletic coordinator. So what has the virtual transition been like for Coach Foster?
I know. I'm sure that's been tough for him because he came in so excited and he's got all these ideas and wants to do all these things. But what's most important anytime you come in new to any place, you know, is building those relationships. And I've been really impressed with how he right away within the first week of him getting here had meetings to meet his coaches on Zoom meetings, you know, at least to see their faces and have some conversations and then to have those individual conversations as well, those meetings. But he took it upon himself to call each and every athlete that we have on campus to introduce himself and let them know how excited he is and the plans that he has for the future of the programs. But he's done a great job. But I know he's antsy because he seems like he's more hands-on person and really wants to just, you know, shake people's hands and what have you. And I have to tell them, coach, you need to put on your gloves and wear your masks, because right now we've been picking up athletic stuff from our students dropping off. They're dropping off the stuff that needs to be returned or picking up items that they still have here. And he's so anxious to get to those cars and talk to those folks. But I tell him he needs to protect himself first. But I'm excited with what he's done already. And I think that's important that he's already reached out to them and he continues to reach out to them, which is also important during this time of staying connected.
I'm sure his excitement and anxiousness is probably the same sentiments that a lot of coaches on the Coastal Bend are having. So I'm sure he's not alone in that.
Yes.
So lastly, I want to talk about you for a second. You know, we're talking about everything that you've been able to do with teachers and parents and kids, but I know May 1st was school principal's day. So unfortunately, you know, you didn't have all your students in the hallways and everything like that. Did y'all do anything different? Did they do anything for you that day?
It was really neat. You know, of course, I got gifts and what have you, but my staff came by and did a parade outside in front of the school on Friday. And they also had a mariachi singer for me, which was really nice. And it was really nice just to be able to see them. You know, we have our meetings on Zoom and again, trying to stay connected as much as possible. But we're a close-knit group here, and it's so hard just doing it electronically in those forums, because I miss having those approachable conversations where we're standing with one another and celebrating with one another. Or, you know, we go through so much here at the school level. It's a big family. You know, you have your ups and you have your downs and you have your disagreements, but when the going gets tough, you know, we're there for one another and we support one another. But they made it a great day. I was really excited to see them all come by here, pass through their cars and what have you, and they got out of their cars and we did some air hugs, but that was about the best we could do for now. And, you know, this week is Teacher Appreciation Week, and it's the same thing. You know, I wish we could celebrate together and have a meal together like we normally do. And those times will come again, but unfortunately not now. But we're going to, again, hit the road and get to those homes and put some yard signs for our teachers and deliver a snack or so. But we just want to show them that we appreciate them.
And I love that y'all come up with those creative things to do, you know, being able to drop off things and talk to each other on Zoom. Best of luck to you guys getting through the end of the school year. You know, the positivity is great, and I think that'll definitely show onto your students and everyone. Thanks for joining us.
Yes, thanks for having me, Amy. Appreciate it.
The Hooks Baseball Podcast continues with Wyatt Matheson, a local hero, a Cal Allen product, who is coming off an all-star campaign with the Reno Aces, which earned him a spot on the Arizona Diamondbacks 40-man roster. Wyatt was a three-time honoree at the South Texas Winter Baseball Banquet as a Cal Allen Wildcat. And this past January, he was named the Mike Adams South Texas Pro Player of the Year. Wyatt, thank you very much for joining us.
Yeah, for sure. Just glad to be on the show. Glad to give back and give the people something to hear during these crazy times.
We're always looking for a diversion. You and your wife, Caitlin, live in Scottsdale, Arizona. What are you guys doing to pass the time right now?
I'm playing a decent amount of golf for sure, because the courses are still open and they're pretty cheap. I play a lot of video games. We play some board games together and watching a lot of Netflix and Hulu, all the streaming services.
That seems to be a pretty common formula. And I guess golf is probably the best social distancing sport that you can engage in right now, right?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, it's just really, I mean, my roommate here is one of the ones that golfs with me, so I'm already around him as it is. And then whoever else I play with, I mean, it's just basically the guys they play golf with. So it's just four dudes that you know where they've been, and you're not really near anybody else. So it's probably the best sport for it right now.
Obviously, you're from Cal Allen. Your wife, Caitlin, from Flower Bluff. How's everybody back home? Family's doing good?
Yeah, everybody's doing good. Both parents are still working. Brothers are both still working. So it's obviously crazy, but everybody's still doing good.
Well, I'm here in Corpus Christi, Texas, and, you know, working from home for the last couple of months. And my wife's a teacher, and she's been doing all the distance learning stuff and uploading different education sessions and different reading tutorials and whatnot. And it's just kind of interesting, the dynamic of me working on projects and her in the dining room working on stuff as well. We've been married now for going on 6 years, and I feel like we've learned a lot living together for 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Normally this time of the calendar, we're apart more than we're together. How have you and Caitlin navigated these waters?
It's a little, I guess I would say it's a little different for us, because she doesn't work or anything. She just stays at home with the dog and the pup and whatnot. And so like during the off season, like I could ease, we're together literally 24 hours a day besides like the days I go in to work out and stuff. So for us, it's pretty much just like we're still in the off season is what it feels like for us. Like it's not, it doesn't really feel any different than 5 months out of the year usually is.
I understand that. Congratulations are in order, by the way. You're recently added to the Diamondbacks 40-man roster. That was in November, a big accomplishment for you. After really a career year at AAA with the Aces, a career best 23 dingers, 61 RBIs, and 87 ball games as the Aces' primary third baseman, your first year in the D-back system. What was the key for you last year?
It was a good year. I had a good mentality going into the year. It was sort of a little new, almost like a new beginning for me, being with the Diamondbacks for the first time. So it sort of just revamped my spirits and my attitude in general towards baseball, just like of just being a new, it's just like anything, getting a new job, but it's just really the same for anybody moving on to something new. You know, you sort of just get a big sort of juice put into you. So it's it was a big year for me. A lot of confidence, big confidence booster for me for sure. I mean, I always knew I had it in the tank to do stuff like that, but just being able to know I can do it was big, obviously.
This is really a testament to perseverance, really. And I guess that's not surprising given the game of baseball and the type of failure that you have in the game. But, you know, even last year you struggled early but bounced back with a 300 May, and then you were named the organization's player of the month for June. It could have been easy for you to kind of just fold up the tent after a rough April and say, you know what, this is just not going to be my year, my first campaign with Arizona. But you didn't let that stop you.
Yeah, I mean, it was the first month was bad. Like, there's no way else to really put it. It was awful. Like, I couldn't hit. I couldn't do it. Like, the balls I would hit hard are right at people. And that wasn't very often. I was hitting balls hard, so it wasn't fun. I mean, I tried to stay with the same like attitude all the time because that's what I tried to make adjustments over my career as a guy that, like, even if I'm doing well or if I'm doing bad, I'm still the same dude in the clubhouse. So it just was really about like just grinding down. I did some video work, figured out what I was doing wrong. And then after that, honestly, it took like one game to sort of like just feel out what I was doing wrong. And then it was on, like it was over. It was good to go.
Put to perspective for folks the relationship between a player and his swing and how tenuous that can be and how it changes so much. You've been in this game for a very long time, but it still seems like a very delicate balance with your comfort level and how you're swinging the bat.
Yeah, I mean, because baseball is such a weird sport because if there's one little thing wrong with anything with your swing, and it affects the whole thing. Like if your timing's a little bit off, it's going to affect this swing. If something with your mechanics is a little bit off, it's going to affect everything else. And it just like if like until you can really figure that out and lock it in, it's like it's a real like seesaw battle. Like if one game you feel like you're good, the next one you feel like you're bad. Like it just depends. And I mean, I've been, this is gonna be my eighth year of pro ball, and I still fight with it, you know, like time to time on finding the swing. I had it the first 2 weeks of spring training this year, I was facing live BPs and I couldn't touch anything. Like I was way off. Like it wasn't even just like not seeing live pitching, I wasn't, my mechanics were a little messed up. And it's just one little thing can be messed up, and it ruins everything.
You mentioned the adjustment, 7 years with the Pittsburgh Pirates, the club that drafted you, a new beginning with the D-backs. What was it like to work in that system, the relationship with the front office, the coaches, and your teammates?
No, it's awesome. It's nothing better, to be honest with you. The coaches are awesome. It's really laid back. Laid back as in – where it's all about business and we're trying to win and we're trying to get better. And like all that is still the same as any other organization, but it's more of like letting you be free and be yourself and as a person. And that was huge for me. Like, cause I'm a little different. I'm like a no nonsense guy, but at the same time, like I'm a little bit quirky at times and I like to have fun and do stuff like that. And obviously I know when it's time to get down to business. But it was nice. It's awesome. The coaches were really receptive. Like I was a first year player there last year in big league camp, and you would have thought like I've been there for 5 years. The way the guys, the big league players, the big league coaches, how they really treat it as a family. And even if you're brand new, it doesn't matter. It's like you're still one of the guys.
Wyatt Tabden, MILB.com, organizational all-star for the D-backs, ranking in the top 10 among D-backs farmhands in almost every offensive category. I got to see you actually in June in Round Rock And that was when the Aces were on a road trip in Texas. You were on fire over a five-game stretch. 11 hits and 17 at-bats with a double and three dingers and nine runs batted in. That must have been quite a thrill for you to have so much success back in the Lone Star State.
Yeah, it was the first time I played in front of – first time I played in Texas in 6 or 7 years. So it was basically the first time I got to play in front of a bunch of family for the first time in my career. So, yeah, it was great. I mean, I was really nervous, honestly, obviously going in. Like, my first at-bat, I think I swung at the first two pitches that weren't even close, close to the strike zone. And I ended up battling back in that, hitting a homer, and it sort of calmed me down for the rest of the series. Yeah, it was huge being able to play that well in front of my friends and family.
Had it not been for a hamstring injury late in the year, you would have been all over the PCL leaderboard. How are you right now health-wise?
Yeah, it's good. It was sort of just a freak accident happened in Tacoma with my hamstring, just sort of slipped, and you didn't really have any traction to stop my leg from going out until it sort of popped a little bit. So it was all right. I mean, right now I'm good. I mean, I was good to going into spring, and I'm good now, waiting for us to get restarted. So I'm ready to go.
Well, the numbers certainly indicate that, given your time in the Cactus League this past spring. 6 hits and 14 ABs, including a pair of doubles, a homer, and 5 RBIs. You were feeling it at the plate. Do you think you've taken a step back? I mean, obviously, it's tough to maintain that focus with this long layover. That has to be a big challenge for you.
Yeah, I mean, it's just it's obviously different, but I'm just trying to take the mindset of, like it's the off season, and I'm trying to be like, obviously I need to be a little more ready than a normal off season, because you're not going to have 2 months of spring training. You're going to have probably 2 weeks. So it's really just trying to treat it like it's the off season, but like maybe a little more hyper focus on everything compared to like if it was a normal off season, but trying to stay with like the same routine of like what I would do hitting wise and just trying to do as much as I can to stay ready to play.
Chatting with Wyatt Matheson from the Arizona Diamondbacks, former Cal Allen Wildcat. A lot of players have different setups and different opportunities during this stay-at-home period for us in terms of access to facilities. How much are you able to work out right now, Wyatt?
I was able to – in Corpus, I was able to not really work out, like, physically besides at my house. My trainer in Corpus, he had sent me some, like, body weight workouts I could do every day and some running stuff to try to stay in shape. And then hitting-wise, I had a cage I could hit at and throw with my dad. But here, my roommate here is he's a coach for the Seattle Mariners. Once we were just trying to figure out, a specific cage location we can hit at, and then we've been throwing in the street and stuff, and I'm still working, doing my normal workout stuff, but we're just trying to find a cage now which I have some options, just got to figure out which one is going to be the best for us, and we're going to start working out at those places.
Well, it's really a bizarre scenario, and hopefully the suspended baseball season will pick back up soon. The reality for the collegiate and high school ranks is a canceled campaign. And given your rich history with the Cal Allen Wildcats, a couple of state final finishes in 2010, 2011, regional semi showing in 2012, your senior campaign, not to mention that regional final in 2009, with that big battle with Moody, number one against number two at Whataburger Field. We'll get to that in a minute. But I'm guessing your heart really has to go out to these high school seniors right about now.
Yeah, I mean, it's pretty tough. I mean, I couldn't imagine my senior year not happening, just especially coming off of 2 state finals in a row. And obviously we didn't get there, but really expecting to win it all that year coming back. I mean, there were probably 6 of us seniors on that team that had all played in 2 straight finals. So, I mean, to be able to have the expectations and the what ifs and stuff like that, especially for a team like ours, and we were ranked number one in the country. And I feel for those guys. I mean, obviously they're not in the spot that we were coming off 2 state finals appearances, but I mean, regardless, just not being able to play at all. I mean, it's going to be some of those kids' last time playing baseball. So, I mean, it's really bad, to be honest with you. It's awful.
It is tough. And you hate to kind of follow social media right now and hear some of the testimonies from the players and the coaches and the pain that they're feeling right now. For me, when I think of the Cal Allen Wildcats, I don't have as much of a history here in the Coastal Bend as most people do. I came in 07 when I started working for the Hooks. But my earliest recollection of it dawned on me how awesome, how big high school baseball was in this area, because I was there for the regional final at Whataburger Field in 2009 between Cal Allen and Moody. and it was a three-game series. Over that three-game series, something like 26,000 fans watched you guys play. What are your memories from that series in particular at Whataburger Field?
I mean, I could almost remember every single thing that happened in that series. Like, it was – I think the craziest part was seeing, like, showing up that day to take the bus and seeing the pictures on social media of the people lined up in front. And, like, you know, you're expecting it to be sold out. Like, we played in front of big crowds, like, during that year, like, on other playoff games. But, I mean, you don't – when you walked into the stadium and you saw that, and it was, like, me being a freshman – I'd obviously never played in front of any type of situation like that before in my life. Some of the other guys had played in the state championship the year before and, you know, had been in that type of pressure. But, I mean, I don't know how you could ever really prepare as a 15-year-old freshman playing in front of 9,700 people. It was insane. I mean, I've never been more nervous in my life for an at-bat, I don't think, than my first at-bat that series against Justin Mesa. I mean, the dude was he was one of the best high school pitchers I ever faced by far. And – that was, I mean, it was a crazy series. We made a lot of errors in the first game, cost us the game. I mean, and then the second game we won. And the third game, I think we just had a little bit of bad luck. Jordan John, I know, blew out his elbow in the second game, so that really set our pitching back a whole game.
I mean, they had a big first inning or second. Something early happened.
Yeah, they had a big first couple of innings in the third game. I know that. And I mean, I think we were the better team. I think we ran into some, we didn't play very well in the first game. And we had some really bad luck with our best pitcher literally blowing his elbow out in the second inning of the second game. So, I mean, it's tough. I mean, it was a tough way to do it. I'd never been in that situation, obviously. So I was happy that we got to the regional finals and like, you know, we played well, but it obviously put a fire in us the next 2 years to make sure we never lost in that series again.
Yeah, it's tough for most people to relate to that type of experience as a freshman. All that you guys were able to accomplish during your particular tenure at Cal Allen, you mentioned the state runs, the state finals in 2010, 2011, your sophomore and junior campaigns, and then in 12, another deep run as well. All the different alums that have passed through there, the likes of Jordan John, who you've referenced, Rob Zastrzyzny, who I know you're close friends with. Do you often look back on your time at Cal Allen and reflect on kind of the foundation and the history that you guys have built?
Yeah, I mean, me and Rob are best friends, so we'll joke around about it all the time, like trying to figure out when our numbers are going to get retired and stuff like that. Like, he just texted me the other day asking about that. He was just like, how is your number not retired yet? And I was like, I mean, I don't know. It's up to Chapman, I guess. But, I mean, we'll talk about it some. Like, we'll talk about just, like, how dominant we were, like, besides obviously not finishing the job, but, like, how, like, we pretty much dominated the Corpus area for 4 years. And, like, I know after that freshman year, like, we weren't going to lose any more Corpus teams. That was, like, one of our main goals is, like, if we're going to get beat, we're not going to get beat by people in our own city. Like, this is going to be – we're going to take over this thing. So, I knew, like, when we played Moody in the regional finals my junior year, they had no shot. Like, they had no chance to beat us. Like, they're just – our mentality was we weren't going to let them – yeah, we weren't going to – we knew we had the better team. That was definitely probably the best hitting team we had was my junior year was, like, we knew we were going to hit 2 or 3 home runs a game. We knew we were going to score a bunch of runs, and we had me and Mondo Arevalo that we're going to shut everybody out. So it wasn't – we knew we weren't going to – we just wanted to dominate our area. Like, we always set out, obviously, the state finals goal, state championship goal, but, like, our main goal was always to win the district and not lose, like, in city. So that was our biggest thing.
You mentioned your prowess on the hill and at your senior campaign, 11-1, an ERA just over 1, 8 complete games, including 5 shutouts. Some remarkable numbers there to go along with a batting average just south of 450. You were drafted by the Pirates in 2012 in the second round as a catcher, I believe. Is that right? Was there any deliberation between pitching or hitting for you?
No, it was, I mean, not going into the draft. Like, whenever – after my sophomore year, I thought I might be a pitcher, and then that, like, I was out on that. I knew I never wanted to really be a pitcher, so I mean, it was always going to be hitting for me.
So when did you shift to the infield?
I got drafted as a catcher in 12. Then I hurt my shoulder in 13. And then they came up to me in the spring training of 14 because they drafted another catcher in 13, a high pick. They came up to me and asked if I want to keep catching and play like 2 to 3 times a week and basically split time and DH the rest, or if they just wanted me to move to infield. And I was never really comfortable as a catcher, and I hit really bad the year before as a catcher just from like the physical toll it took on me. So they asked, and I was like, I mean, this is the perfect opportunity for me to get out from behind the plate. Like, obviously, like, maybe sometimes, like, it could have, like, I could have got to the big leagues quicker, I guess, if I could have started hitting as a catcher. But, like, I don't even know if I'd still be playing right now with the physicality it takes to be a catcher. So, that was why I made the move to third.
Yeah, catchers have a tough time hitting because so much of their energy, their focus goes toward the defensive side, the physicality of it, and obviously the pitching. You have to handle that pitching staff. It's a big-time challenge.
Yeah, that was the biggest thing for me. I mean, I lost, I think in the first month and a half of my first full season in 13, I lost 25 to 30 pounds, jeez, like just from catching. Like, because I was so tired, I wouldn't eat. And then, like, the mentality of, like, the mental aspect was probably the biggest thing, was that I couldn't really worry about my hitting that much. So I had to worry about the catching part of it and worry about the pitchers and, like, all their stuff more than I could worry about my own hitting. So definitely suffered because of that. And people just don't realize it's not easy to catch six times a week, five times a week. Like, that's not, like, just really showing up every day and catching nine innings. It's not. It takes special breeds to do stuff like that.
We mentioned earlier a second-round pick in 2012 with the Pirates. You were actually committed to UT, is that right?
Yeah.
There's some talk about the draft, the amateur draft shrinking, you know, possibly 10 to 5 rounds. What's your take on how that might affect the experience for high school players and even collegiate guys?
I think it hurts the college guys more than anything, because I think the statistics and the percentages say that guys drafted out of high school past probably the 10th round aren't going to sign anyways. So I think it really affects the college guys who, like, I mean, the guys who don't want to go back to college and play another year since they got their eligibility back. But at the same time, none of those guys are on full rides. That just means more money to go to school. So I think it really affects the college guys more than it affects the high school dudes when it comes to, like, the draft being shrunk down.
You mentioned you're a big-time gamer, and Major League Baseball, along with MLB The Show, has come up with the Players League. Have you paid any attention at all to that?
No, not really. I play the sports video games, but I'm not big on playing against people. So, like, that doesn't amuse me at all. Like, I play fighting games, play Call of Duty, Fortnite, Battle Royale games.
You have a guy who can really, you know, play the game of baseball very well in actual life, but just not interested in playing it virtually, like on MLB The Show. Is that because you kind of been there, done that? Doesn't really resemble the experience that you get on the diamond, or you just want to look at new things?
I play the show. I played a lot, actually. I don't play against other people. And, like, that, I like playing against a computer and playing franchise modes and being, like, the GM and stuff like that. So I play it. I just don't. I would never watch that. Like, it's not baseball. It's not, like, I'm not going to watch that.
Well, how's your season going right now on the show?
I just drafted a new team. I drafted, like, all pitchers in the first, like, seven rounds. So our hitting's not very good. We score, like, two or three runs a game, but we play good defense and we pitch the ball well. We're, like, 8-4, so we'll take it.
Sounds like a true national leaguer.
Oh, yeah, for sure. I usually draft a bunch of bangers, and this time I was like, I'm going to just draft all pitchers this time. So our rotation's nasty.
Well, Wyatt, good luck with your MLB The Show campaign, and best of luck in your actual 2020 campaign. We're really proud of you, and we're hoping for continued success. Thanks for doing this, bud.
Oh, for sure. Thanks for having me.
Well, Wyatt takes us to the finish line of this installment of the Hooks Baseball Podcast. A big thanks to Mr. Wildcat Wyatt Matheson, along with Elizabeth Perez, the principal of King High School, and Wes Weigel, Hooks GM. Please subscribe to the show at your preferred podcast outlet and check us out next week. We also look forward to your feedback on who you'd like to hear from in the future. For Amy Johnson and JD Davis, this is Mike Coffin saying good day, and thanks for listening to the Hooks Baseball Podcast.